Finally, to the most abundant stuff in the atmosphere, nitrogen, and why turning it into fertiliser to feed a growing population is also a recipe for trouble. Jim Galloway.
All life needs nitrogen in the form of amino acids. We get our amino acids by eating food. If we don't have amino acids, we can't survive, no other species can survive. And so the question is, where do you get your amino acids? 100 years ago, there was enough nitrogen naturally occurring in the environment for humans to grow enough food. But in 1898, Sir William Crookes, the president of the British Association of the Advancement of Science, in his annual address, said to the assembled members, there was not enough nitrogen available to feed the civilized world. Now, civilized world, I'm sure he meant the UK, maybe not the US at the time.
Not the colonies.
Not the colonies. And so that was over 100 years ago. And it was just to set the stage for things to come, because we just didn't have enough nitrogen. And so that's why that led to the invention of the Haber-Bosch process by Fritz Haber and Carl Bosch.
I think the World War could have helped there as well. There.
Well, you know, that's fascinating. Vaclav Smil has written an excellent book called Enriching the Earth, MIT Press, 2001, where he talks about Haber and Bosch and how their ardent nationalism for Germany really drove them to first invent the process and then scale it up to an industrial level where they could provide munitions for Germany because, of course, Germany was blockaded.
But this, of course, enabled them to make ammonia, which is the starting material for all of this fixed nitrogen, all these fertilizers and other compounds we want to make from nitrogen. And that meant that farmers could then begin to put the stuff on the soil. But therein the rot has set in since, hasn't it? Because now we're in a position where we're putting tons of the stuff all over the place.
So, yes, you're absolutely right. That the Haber-Bosch process converts N2, you know, two nitrogen atoms stuck together in the atmosphere, to ammonia. And it is then used as fertilizer, used for some other things too, like bombs, but now today mostly fertilizer. And we needed it because there are just too many people eating too high up the food chain to use just natural sources of nitrogen. And so now we're making about 100 million metric tons of nitrogen fertilizer a year globally. The good news is it's feeding a large percent of the world population. The bad news is that much of it, some would say most of it, is lost to the environment after the food production process. And this is contributing to smog, to acid deposition, to global change, to dead zones in the coast, to stratospheric ozone depletion, a list of environmental issues all connected together, because literally one atom of nitrogen put in the atmosphere, made active by humans, will contribute to all of those problems in sequence. It's called the nitrogen cascade.
So of the whatever amount we put of nitrogen onto a field, how much actually goes into the plant and therefore into my mouth and your mouth, and how much doesn't? What fraction goes in each direction?
If you're a vegetarian, then the amount of nitrogen that is applied, about 20% would get into your mouth.
Okay. Gosh, 80% goes into all these other areas.
That's
causes
right.
Seas to have dead zones and so
that's
on.
Right.
So that's a worry.
And if you only ate meat, it's around 10%. Goes into your mouth. The other 90% is lost during the food production process. That's a major issue. And there's various points along the food production pathway where nitrogen is lost, and also points along the food production pathway where you can control the losses. So this is not just a bad news story. This is a story that's saying we need to take some action here. There are some places where we can take effective action, and this should be done not just in the developed world, but also especially in the developing world.
Tell us about that, because do you think it's going to be effective to go up to people in Indonesia and China and say, you can't use all this fertilizer because this will be the onward consequence for the environment? We haven't got much evidence that they really care about the environment now, so why should they worry about this?
Let me break that question up into two parts. For the developed countries, I think there's a strong foundation of environmental awareness that either exists or can be built upon. For the developing countries, you can tie directly the losses of nitrogen to the environment of those countries and decreased ability to grow food and decreased ability to use their coastal zones to raise marine biomass. And so I think showing people If you don't control nitrogen issues, your air is going to get worse. You're going to have huge human health impacts. You're going to have increased losses of nitrogen in the coastal zone, and it's going to impact the very fabric of your human and ecological health.
So what could the average person do to make the biggest inroads into reducing their nitrogen footprint like this?
The first is to eat only the protein that you need. The USDA recommended level is 3 kilograms of nitrogen per person per year. The average American eats about 5. And so just by decreasing that 5 down to 3, smaller portions of steak, 1 egg instead of 2 eggs, is not rocket science, as they say. That would decrease the amount of nitrogen lost in the environment of the United States by almost 50%.
Sensible advice. I should be modifying my diet accordingly. That was Jim Galloway from the University of Virginia. And finally, a special message for Aussie fans of The Naked Scientists, because Australia is the first country to be publishing my new book, Stripping Down Science. It's a collection of science myths debunked in a fun and humorous way, and it's not out anywhere else yet. So if you like The Naked Scientists, then please do show your support by picking up a copy at the bookstore. And as an added incentive, somewhat dubiously, you get to see what a partially naked me might look like on the cover. That's it for this time. Normal service resumes next week when we'll be answering all your science questions. Do send them in to chris@thenakedscientist.com. Meanwhile, thank you very much for listening. And until next time, goodbye.
The Naked Scientists comes to you from Cambridge University and is supported by the Wellcome Trust, the EPSRC, the Natural Environment Research Council, and UK FAST. For more information, look us up online at thenakedscientists.com.